So hello again and welcome to another episode of Quick Question with Soren and Daniel, the podcast where two best friends and comedy writers ask each other questions and give each other answers. I'm one half of that podcast, author of How to Fight Presidents and staff writer for Last Week Tonight with John Oliver, Daniel O'Brien, joined as always by my co-host, Mr. Soren Bowie. Soren, say hello.
Hey everybody, I'm Soren Bowie. I'm a writer for American Dad. Previously worked at Cracked, helped write the Cracked book, so I've got a book on the shelves if you wanted to go find it. I could even tell you which little sections I wrote. No big deal. But if you find yourself reading it and you laugh out loud, it's probably mine. And that's about it from me. All right, that's the show. Thanks, everybody. Man. See you next week. Thanks to Mack Weldon for supporting Quick Question. Mack Weldon is a premium men's essentials brand that believes in smart design and high-quality fabrics. For 20% off your first order, visit mackweldon.com/QQ and enter promo code QQ. Thanks to Hello Tushy for supporting Quick Question. Keep your sweaty crack clean all summer long with the latest in butt cleaning technology, water. Clean your butthole with a bidet. Get 10% off plus free shipping and get your butt clean at hellotushy.com/QQ. Thanks to Skillshare for supporting Quick Question. Skillshare empowers you to accomplish real growth. Do something today you couldn't do yesterday with classes designed for real life. Skillshare is an online learning community with so much to explore, real projects to create, and the support of fellow creatives. Explore your creativity at skillshare.com/QQ and get a 1 month free trial of premium membership.
I genuinely don't think I could tell you what parts I worked on for the Crackedy textbook.
You don't recognize your writing?
Not really. I know I did a bunch of it, but I also, like, there's so much, especially back then, the overlap between the way I wrote and the way that we tried to make Cracked sound is very...
that's true.
There's a lot of overlap, I guess, and... it would be, really difficult for me to tell which is which. I guess I could say the funny parts.
Yeah,
but that sounds...
the overlay of the voices of Cracked. Like, there is one voice of Cracked, and the overlay is basically a mixture of you, Jason, and the other guy. And Jack.
That's almost criminally irresponsible.
The guy who invented it.
Gave us all of our careers. Always a supportive, generous man.
And so, when everybody else was writing, they were aping essentially your three style. So I guess I can understand that, why it would look so camouflaged in there. But like, I can remember writing the foreword for that book and being very proud of it. And I can remember there are sections of it. My son occasionally picks it up and looks at it because he likes the pictures a lot and asks me to read sections to him. And I'll read something. I'll be like, reading to him about the mimic octopus. And I'll be like, oh, wait, I wrote this.
Yeah, I remember that being very funny. So much so that my brain was like, you probably did that part. I feel like I have no real recall over what episodes of Agents of Cracked I wrote, a show I did with Michael.
Yeah.
And you wrote an episode, and Cody wrote an episode, and Jack wrote a couple episodes, and Jason wrote a few. And I know which ones, like, Jason, Jack, you or Cody wrote, but for the most part, that show became such a weird blend of both of us, because we also took passes on each other's scripts. The first two seasons, I think, we didn't even say written by credit for any of them. Because it was all just like from these two egoless 20-somethings. And like truly rewatching an old episode and being like, that's pretty funny. Is that rude of me to say? Who knows?
Yeah, that stuff sort of gets hazy after a while. And when I look back on the old videos that we did, like when you talked about the Sky Monster Action Plan movie or show that we did, I was like, I didn't write an episode of that. Oh yeah, I did.
After Hours are a little bit easier to tell because I usually remember the argument that like I could tell an argument that's born out of my brain, and also I could tell by what lines I've chosen to give myself if I have like easy lines or like an opportunity for something fun or a reason for me to have note cards in my hands. Very often I'm like, oh yeah, I see. Or, like, I guess the only ways I could tell Agents are cracked is if for some reason in season one, the Daniel character, instead of his trademark vest, tie, and button-down shirt, has for some reason found himself in a t-shirt. I bet I wrote that.
Yeah, that's the very easy way to go through After Hours and determine if I wrote the episode is just check the cross the page in the script and see if it says, so everybody, the gang is all eating. Soren is eating a chocolate silk pie from Clam Jumpers that you'll have to get at this freezer section of Ralph's. If it's not there, Pavilions also carries it, but you'll have to drive all the way to Culver City to get it.
Good. Good welcoming way to get people into the show. Do you want to...
Yeah.
Do the show.
I think that's a good idea. We should. I think that's what they came for. I have a quick question for you.
Go.
Obviously, my quick questions always come with a very long, meandering premise. I mean, a preface. So let me do that first. I'm reading Hatchet to my son. Are you familiar with the book Hatchet?
No.
Okay. The premise of Hatchet is that there's a young boy. I think he's 13 or 14, and he is on a plane and gets lost in the Canadian wilderness. The plane goes down and he gets lost and the pilot who's with him dies tragically, but the boy survives the plane crash and he's stuck out in the Canadian wilderness without anyone around, and he's there for I think 58 days. And all he's got with him is a hatchet. And it's about him learning how to survive out there. First of all, you know, dealing with the issue of like, this is completely impossible. I'm hearing all kinds of wolves and things like that. And then slowly realizing that he can do it and what it takes to do it. And then coming out the other side. Now there are a bunch of follow-up books, which are also pretty good. There's like one called The River where he goes back out there to show it some guy who's working with the government. Who's like, we want him to be able to tell people how to survive out in the wilderness, especially if there are soldiers, if they get stuck out there, how to use the elements to their advantage. And then obviously things go wrong again and the boy's out there alone again. But I'm reading Hatchet currently.
Is this book supposed to be for your son's age?
No. So I'm realizing that as I'm reading it to him. The minute the pilot died, he's basically crashes in a lake and he looks over and the dead pilot sitting next to him. And this continues to haunt him throughout the rest of the story. I was like, oh, you know what? I think I read Hatchet in about fourth grade. But he is enjoying it. He really likes it for the same reasons that I liked it when I was young, which was the complete wrong reason of the story, which was I fantasized exclusively about being lost in the wilderness and how I would thrive out there. And like picturing in my head in the fantasy every single detail that I would do. And I want to know if that's universal, if like every kid who ever hears about the prospect of being lost in the wilderness and how terrifying it would be to face wild animals and make your own fires, every kid goes, fuck yes. Give me that right now.
I want to say yes, it's universal, but I don't know if it's if that's strictly kids. And the reason I bring that up is because I saw Into the Wild when I was definitely in college, and it's a movie about Emil Hirsch's character. It's based on a book. He graduates college and then like destroys all of his credit cards, destroys his car. Says goodbye to his family forever and just lives out in the world. And the movie is him like meeting different weird characters, and he works at this job for a while, and now he's at this like desert sort of co-op colony for a while, and his dream seems to be end up in Alaska and then just live off the land in Alaska. He has a bunch of fun doing it, and then he fucking dies from the elements. He might even poison himself accidentally.
Yeah, so it's based on Christopher McCandless, who was like a real guy who did all this. John Krakauer wrote a book about him, but like he went out there, was like kind of irresponsible, but somehow just like got very lucky and lived for a long time, and then ate the wrong shit, and it just slowly he wasted away out there and died.
Yeah. And I watched that movie on my older brother's suggestion, and when it was done, he was like, "What did you think?" I'm like, "I think I want to rip up my credit cards, burn my car, go to Alaska."
Yeah.
It seems so freeing. I want to do mostly exactly what that guy did.
Yeah. Crazy that Zach Galifianakis is in that movie as like a blue collar, hard nosed trucker kind of guy. He's one of his bosses at one point. Or no, he just works with him. He works.
Isn't go ahead. Vince Vaughn too?
Yes. Like some weird, yeah. weird casting choices. They got like very comedic actors to play very straight roles. And Zach Galifianakis tells him basically what to do when you kill big game. How do you preserve that game, that meat, so that you can live off of it out there? And as he's telling him, like, it's pretty detailed. And I was doing the same thing when I was a kid. I was like taking notes. I was like, okay, so I got to bury it immediately. I got to get it in the moss. That's important. Take all the guts out. Okay. 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 I could do all that. Good advice. Thank you, Zach.
Yeah. It's, yeah. And it's definitely like the movie is not trying to, they don't want you to walk away from that movie thinking the guy who abandoned his sister and family and then died is the hero or someone that you should like take lessons from. But that's, I certainly did. I did it for that. And also 127 Hours, another based on a real story about a guy who went hiking.
Aaron Ralston.
Or I guess like biking. Is that what he was doing? Biking in the in canyons?
He was canyoneering. So like he biked out there and then he was just like rappelling and working through the canyons.
And he fell and a rock landed on his arm and he was there for 127 hours until he had to cut his own arm off and then find help and miraculously survive. And it's like a difficult to watch movie. It's very torturous. They do a really good job walking you up to the decision to cut his arm off and then like really making you feel like that was a that probably really did hurt and I hope to never have to do it. But at the start of that movie, he leaves and it's still like dark out. He leaves his house. He doesn't leave a note for anyone. He doesn't tell anyone he's going. He just goes for a hike. And I did that shit the day after I saw that movie. I watched that movie in theaters. I'm like, I'm going to Topanga Canyon tomorrow and I'm not going to tell anyone.
This is a really important question.
Because I like the freedom of that.
This is an important question. When you did your hike without telling anyone, very pointedly not telling anyone, did you bring a pocket knife with you?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
So, but I think I like always had a pocket knife, like even before I was doing any real hiking. When my brothers and I all went to college, our dad got us a gift of a pocket knife as like, here, this is some kind of transition into manhood thing slash protection in college. I don't know.
A lot of unsavory characters in college quads.
Yeah.
You might be walking through one at night. You're going to need this bad boy.
Yeah. On the first day, you go up to, you find the biggest guy. Well, first, you go to your RA. You ask, where's the biggest guy? And then you get into a fight with the biggest guy.
And you stab him. And that's how you graduate.
Yeah.
Here's
this knife in case you need to stab anyone to death in college.
This is tangential. Jesus. But I'm vaguely recalling a story of you getting pulled over as a pedestrian on a freeway when you got to LA and a cop finding a knife in your bag. Mack Weldon is a premium men's essentials brand that believes in smart design and high quality fabrics. If you're looking to save time on deciding what to wear, Mack Weldon has a solution for you with their new Daily Wear system. The Daily Wear system has clothes made with performance fabrics and smart design. This includes breathable t-shirts and polos, stylish button-ups and shorts, underwear, and more. Wherever your summer takes you, Mack Weldon makes it easy for you to dress for any occasion, work, leisure, or play. And after summer's over, the fun doesn't end with Mack Weldon. They've got you covered for all four seasons, my friend. They can dress you so you don't have to dress yourself. Advertising for Mack Weldon is a true pleasure because I genuinely enjoy their product. I have several of their underwear. When after wearing some Mack Weldon underwear, it basically made me want to throw out all my other pairs. I am a boxer brief gentleman. That's just what I happen to prefer. And they're so great. It made me realize how much fidgeting and moving I used to be doing in my old underwear and how I would occasionally surreptitiously try and stuff a whole hand down my pants to even out the legs of my boxer briefs as they got bunched up. Never happens with my Mack Weldon products. They're great and they're breathable and they make me feel good and they make me forget about them. And that's the most important part. I'm not thinking about my body throughout the day and that feels pretty darn good. For 20% off your first order, visit mackweldon.com/QQ and enter promo code QQ. That's mackweldon.com/QQ with promo code QQ for 20% off. Mack Weldon, reinventing men's basics. You really didn't know how the city worked yet.
No. and this is, I feel bad telling this story now because I've gotten older, and fun stories to tell about run-ins with police officers used to be a reliable, delightful icebreaker. But as I've gotten older and stories of there's a disproportionate amount of fun that you can have with run-ins with police officers based on your race
and gender.
And so like it's less of a treat to be like, look at all these times where I should have gotten in trouble and didn't. So I've retired talking about most of those stories, but this one, cause it came up organically and because I'm just trying to pad time in this episode, I moved to LA. It was my first time going back to Jersey for Christmas and I didn't have any friends. I also didn't have a lot of money for like, taxis, and I didn't understand how public transportation worked, and I needed to take my car in somewhere to get repairs, and it lined up with this trip to New Jersey. It was like, great, I'm gonna drop the car off at this repair place and then I won't need a car for a week because I'll be in New Jersey, and I'll get it when I get back from New Jersey. The place was pretty close to my apartment at the time, so I dropped my car off, and then I was just going to run the 4 miles or whatever from the repair place to home, which is a fine plan. But the 4 miles was on the 405 because that's what Google Maps told me was the fastest route. So I was just running in the shoulder of this very unsafe, very famously dangerous, very fast freeway.
The worst freeway in Los Angeles.
Correct.
the very narrow shoulder, very small lanes, and very windy.
Yes. And I'm running. I'm making good time. And I also like cleared everything out of my car to put in my backpack. And I was running home with my backpack. And a cop pulled me over very quickly and gets out of his car. And like no decorum of cop stuff going on. He was like, what are you doing? And I was like, I don't have any friends. I'm running home. This is the route that I took to get here. So I'm just following it back. I gave him my driver's license because he asked for it, and it was still a Jersey license. And he was like, do they let you run down the freeway in Jersey? And I said, yes.
Oh. Wait, but you never did that in Jersey.
No.
And also, do they even call them freeways there? You just have like highways,
yeah,
don't you?
We have like Garden State Parkway and highways and stuff. But, you know, I don't think he was too familiar with the intricacies of our road system.
Yeah, you bluffed him.
Yeah, and that's when we're like, yeah, we do it all the time. Our governor does it. You love it. It's great.
Yeah.
And so I was like, all right, well, you can't run on the 405. I'm going to drive you home. I'm going to search you before I put you in my car because I have to do that. So now I'm on the side of the road with my hands in the back of my head, and he searches me. And he's like, I got to search your bag too. Do you have any guns, knives, weapons, bombs in your bag? I'm like, no, it's just stuff I was clearing out of my car. And he pulls out a pocket knife, and in perfectly comedically timed, it's the first thing he grabs. His hand just like goes for it and pulls out a knife, and he shows the knife to me, and I'm like, oh, I do have a knife. And he's like, you can't have this. Like,
wait, how big is the knife?
It's bigger than, when it's unfolded, it's bigger than my hand.
This is not a Swiss Army knife. This is like a, I have to skin this animal now knife.
Yes, yeah. And like he measured it. It's too big for me to have. He still gives it back to me. This is like tremendous amounts of idiot white privilege on display that I am alive and not dead or in prison or horrible statistic somewhere. And he gets me in the car and he drives me to my apartment. And he also points out like, you need to get your driver's license changed to a California license. He's just like listing very dumb, basic things. Like, you can't run on the 405. You can't have this knife. You got to change your driver's license. And he's dropping me off just like, you just got to be better.
Yeah, you got to grow up, man.
You can't be like this. Talk to someone.
I love how after he catches you on the 405 running, it's like everything's eggshells after that. He's just like walking very delicately with everything. Like, okay. Yeah, listen, you can't have a knife this giant in your bag. You can't.
Yeah.
You got to get your license changed. You can't run on the 405. Actually, you know what? Let me come in your apartment. I'm going to tell you if there's some stuff wrong in there that's going to kill you in the next couple days.
Yeah, I don't know. You've done so many stupid things immediately that I don't know where the line is, so I'm just going to throw some stuff out there. You can't leave your burners on when you leave. You can't leave your door unlocked. You can't, if you have like a kid at home in a tub, you can't do that. How's that? Just Just check all these things. Check all your outlets. Check your fireplace.
I'm going to come back in a couple days. I just want to make sure you're okay.
Just got to make sure you're eating.
That's so funny. It's very easy to look back and laugh at those moments now that we're adults, but you know, early 20s, nobody was good at being grown up yet. College is maybe like the very worst thing to prepare you for what it's like to be in the real world because it's so insular and they really, it's padded walls at college.
Yeah.
And when you get out of the real world, you don't know how to do anything. Like very basic stuff is so confusing and hard. Down to like check writing where you're like, I don't understand.
Yeah.
Okay. So tell me again with the gas pump. I picked the one that says 85 and like you just don't know this shit.
Yeah.
And when you're kind of learning it along the way and you're doing it very quietly because it's so embarrassing that you think you're the only person who doesn't know till later when you find out everybody else was running on freeways and carrying big knives.
Yeah. I remember you say like writing checks. I remember my first apartment, giving in a rent check on like the 17th or 18th of a month because I'd gotten paid that day. And I was just like, at the manager's office, just like, here, I have it now. I don't know if I'm going to have this much later. So like, take this now. Okay. And then we're good.
Somebody had to come to my first apartment that Dan Campana and I lived in. And they did some work on the ceiling was leaking. And afterwards, I had to pay the guy, and I was going to get reimbursed by the landlord called me. He's like, whatever they charge, just like pay them and then I will reimburse you. And so I had to write this check and really had a moment of panic where I went to the memo line and started to write maintenance and then realized I didn't know how to spell maintenance. And I was like, okay, be cool. Just, you got this. What else could you write? And eventually just spelled something that I was like, I hope that says maintenance. And then kept fretting about it. Like when he sees that check, does that check not work now? Like not knowing, I didn't know what part of the checks were important. And like,
man, I don't know if any parts of the checks are important. Cause I remember my first year of like writing checks for things. I like calling Verizon or one of the people that I was sending bills to. And I said, hey, something just occurred to me. I can't remember if I signed that check. So just let me know if it comes to you and it's not signed. And I'll send out another one. And you could write void on that one. And the Verizon person was like, it's going to be fine. And it ended up being fine.
Yeah, it's weird that you're just allowed to do that. I would go to cash checks occasionally that would be to my wife and me at a bank where she wasn't a joint member on the account. And sometimes they'd be like, you can't cash this here. There's somebody else's name on it. And other times they'd be like, looks fine to me. And they just cash it. I was like, okay, well, it's just lawless, I guess. Checks are whatever you want them to be. Makes you want to rip them up and walk into the wilderness, huh, Dan?
Absolutely. Didn't have to worry about signing anything when he was dying violently.
I think he actually passed very slowly in his bus. He found a bus out there.
That's right. He lived in a bus out there.
And we read that book when I was in high school, and I went to a famously very outdoor forward high school. Mm-hmm. And as we were reading it, everyone was having the same reaction, which was the indulgence of it, of like, fuck it, I could do it. I could live out there. And like, everyone's getting excited. And then one day we walk into class to do it. And my teacher, what's his name? Peter Mueller. That was his name. Okay. He's like, everybody on the bus. And we're like, okay. And we had these little tiny buses back then because it's a small school. So like these little things that we called fat boys. And everybody got on this bus. And this was probably February. He drove us up into the mountains, essentially. There's an area that's like called Spring Gulch up above Carbondale, where I grew up. And there's all these little valleys and ravines up there. He drove us up there and just parked the bus on the side of the road. And he's like, get out. And we all got out with our backpacks, and nobody is dressed for snow because we're dressed to go to class. But he has us hike up this ditch, which is just, it's all powder. This is not well trod. And we're all getting drenched and we've got snow in our shoes and everything. And he's like, now sit down. And I was like, no. He's like, no, we're doing class here. Please sit down. And everybody has to sit out there in the snow. And then we started reading some more of In the Wild. And as we're reading it, he's like, this is what it's like. Like, you're not prepared. You don't have any of the things you need. This is the miserable part. This is what it's going to be like every single day, except you don't have the luxury of other people around you either. You're just alone. And everyone's like, oh, yeah, okay, I'd die. That's fair.
Well, I think counterpoint, Mr. Mueller, that's not what it was like. It was not a surprise when he got to Alaska that there was snow.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But like story like Hatchet, he was woefully underprepared, Christopher McCandless. But a story like Hatchet, like that is, you're not, you think about going out there and you're like, okay, and then I'm bringing my dehydrated meals. I've got my pocket rocket stove. I've got all the things. I've got at least like a ground tarp at the very least, something I could build a lean-to with. But no, you have nothing. You're going out there with nothing. And then you got to figure it out. And that's, you know, part of me is like, oh, that sounds scary. And part of me has always been like, oh, fuck, man, I just let it all go. Nothing else. That sounds great. I'd listen to the birds. I'd know when they were given their warning calls. I mean, I don't know it now, but I'd learn it.
Yeah. You'd have to pick it up, right?
Yeah. So there's a show called Alone. Are you familiar with this?
You've talked about it on the show, yeah.
Yeah. It satisfies the same itch for me. It's like they really are out there and completely alone, and I guess they're allowed to bring certain supplies with them, like they bring hunting bows and things like that, but boy, I watched that show and I'm like, okay, how do I get on this? And then I'll be thinking to myself, no, come on, Soren, you've got kids. And then one of the people that they're introducing will do their backstory and they're like, you know, it's really hard being out there because I've got my one-year-old back at home. And I'm like, oh, I have a one-year-old. I could do this.
Colleen, there's a precedent.
Hey, quick question. Listeners, audience, how clean's your butt right now? Go ahead, answer. It's fine. I'm listening. Because I bet you don't know. That's the thing about butts. It's very hard to tell when your butt is actually clean. Even as adults, boy, it's really tough. There's like, all your sensory information is on the top of your head and the butt is on the back. And down below, it couldn't be further away, except maybe if we had buttholes on our ankles. I wouldn't mind that, actually. That would actually be really nice. You could just, I'd be like Andy Dufresne walking around dropping dirt out of the bottom of my pants, but just doing that discreetly pooping as I walk around a baseball diamond instead. Well, until we have that technology, there's Tushy. Summer's here and the living ain't easy if you've got swamp ass. So how do you stay on top of it with your sweaty bottom? With the brand new Hello Tushy 3.0 Modern Bidet Attachment. It's stylish, it's eco-friendly, refreshing, and it's kind of like a little shower, I want to say, for your butt. You know, that's not even right. It's more like a little windshield wiper spray for your butt. Like if you got up on your hood and you just bent over and like opened your cheeks up and said, go for it. Obviously, you need somebody else in the car doing this for you because you couldn't do it alone. And then they just gave you a little spritz. That's what it feels like. Hello Tushy 3.0 cleans soggy butts like a champ, but it doesn't stop there. It cleans itself with the Smart Spray automatic self-cleaning nozzle. If there's any downside, it's that it makes doing your business in places that don't have a Hello Tushy very unpleasant, unless you have a car that you could get up there and do it on. So like you have to stop on the side of the road, maybe you do your business there, or you're in one of those, what do they call them, restrooms. You come right out, you get up on your car, you get the exact same experience. Breaking news, the biggest scam rocking the nation is toilet paper. If you got poo on your arm, would you wipe it off with dry paper? I hope not. Or would you wash it with water? That's the right answer. Hello Tushy's got your ass covered with a 60-day risk-free guarantee as well, and a 12-month warranty. So if you don't like it, you can send it back. Can't do that with toilet paper, my friends. Already got a Hello Tushy on the pot? Treat your ass to the new 3.0 model. If you're new to the revolution, join millions of happy Hello Tushy customers right now and have a clean butt with every flush. Defeat swamp ass. Go to hellotushy.com/QQ to get 10% off plus free shipping. This is a special offer for our listeners at hellotushy.com/QQ for 10% off. hellotushy.com/QQ.
This is tangential, but did you read the K growing up?
Of course.
So I'm just thinking of like why there was such a market for Hatchet, the K, and Lord of the Flies, just these books where tragedy happens and some kid has to live in the wilderness somewhere.
There's another one called
the K, for anyone who doesn't know,
go ahead.
Like a young white British kid, his plane or boat crashes, and he's stuck with an older black man, and it's like it's high status kid and low status person back in wherever they were coming from, but then the man certainly knows survival better than the kid, and teaches him how to live on this small island that they wash up on. And also the kid, in like an early beat of this stuck up punk kid story, the guy's like, hey, we're floating on a raft to this island. Just want you to know, don't stare at the sun or you'll go blind. And the kid's like, fuck off, and stares at the sun and goes blind.
Yeah.
So it's just this blind kid and this relative stranger surviving together on this island.
There's another book of this called The Goats, which is also a really good tween. What's that genre called?
Young adult?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a young adult book. And it's just like that. It's like two kids who get stuck out on an island together when they're at camp. But I'm realizing that like the granddaddy of all of these is Huck Finn. And that's such a great, satisfying, indulgent book to read when you're a kid. Of like, yeah. And then I just go down the river.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, you're getting away from your parents. You think about all those horrible, grim fairy tales where the kids go get lost in the woods. And as an adult, you're like, why did they make those so dark? But I don't think you remember that as a kid, when a story starts with, and now you're alone in the woods, you're like, great.
Awesome.
Let's do it. Yeah.
Good.
Tell me what happens next, because I am in.
Yeah, kids in Lord of the Flies, their boat crashes and they're stuck on an island. It's like, uh-oh, so long, brushing my teeth.
I only have one pair of clothes, is what you're saying, and I never have to change again. Sounds great. Let's do it.
Yeah.
Let's make spears. Let's kill the monster.
Yeah, I wonder if we should try hunting kids we don't like, or if we should like stick to the plan and like make Sunday school. Oh, nope, we're all already wild and hunting the kid we hate. Good.
I do. There was that weird satisfaction from that story too. I remember that. It's. I wonder if this is. I'm maybe outing myself as sexist here. So bear with me, please, Daniel.
Yeah.
If this is a boy fantasy, or if everybody has this.
I didn't want to make that broad sweeping generalization, but I think it is, because like my mother and sister-in-law also watched Call of the Wild around the time that my brother and I did, and they were like, that Emil Hirsch character, selfish. I'm like, no, totally selfish. Hey, David, a word?
David, I need your lighter. Please, I have to burn this credit card right now. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the stories are horrific, and I think there's a point that it's just boys on the island in Lord of the Flies. Like, that's part of it. But I wonder if that... God, if only we had a female perspective on this show that we could check in every once in a while with. But yeah, I wonder if it's a horror story for some people and then like an indulgence for others. And the people who it's an indulgence for just have to like very quietly be like, oh yeah, it's bad. It's bad. It would be bad to be out there alone and just watching the sunset every day and seeing the bats fly through the air.
Yeah.
Knowing the earth. Yeah, that's bad. That's bad.
Yeah.
Boy, there's some natural disaster happening in New York right now. I think
that's
the second round of a squad.
Yeah, I'm sorry. It's just the city.
It's just the city.
It's just my city. It's just my home.
Yeah. Boy, trade one canyon walls for another set of canyon walls, huh, Dan? No?
No.
Yeah, okay.
No, I was just dreaming about, you know, falling off the trail on, I guess, alongside the Hudson, and maybe getting, there are some boulders I can get my arm stuck in.
Uh-huh.
Maybe I could live out my fantasy there.
I read that story. So I haven't watched 127 Hours because I don't think I can.
Oh.
But I read his story. I think Aaron Rolston wrote it for Outside Magazine and basically just did a very detailed accounting. And the same sort of thing is in the sequels to Hatchet, where they make him go back and relive it. This Outside Magazine took a photographer with him. They went back to where it happened, back to the rocks. He showed them everything that happened, and he tells the whole story. And I had to read this over the course of a day of like four or five different sittings where I would sit there and read some and then have to go lie down because it was so awful to read. And really, like, I don't do well with blood. And he's describing what it feels like to finally cut through the bone, like finish that cut and like the first cut and when he starts getting through arteries and stuff. And I was like genuinely getting sick. And I'd have to go lie down for a little and think about something else. And then I'd be like, okay, steel myself a little bit emotionally and go read the rest of it. Let me ask you something. What is your artistic endeavor right now? Do you have one? Are you doing something artistic? I'll bet even if you answered no to that question, the true answer is yes. You just don't think of it as art because it's something that's so ingrained in you and so innate that you feel like you have to do it. There's like a calling to it. We are all born to create in some capacity. We want to feel necessary in relationship to the world. And that's what art does, folks. Whether you last picked up a paintbrush yesterday or in grade school, you can explore your creativity and be inspired by Skillshare. Skillshare is an online learning community that offers membership with meaning. With so much to explore, real projects to create, and the support of fellow creatives, Skillshare empowers you to accomplish real growth. It's also incredibly affordable, especially when compared to pricey in-person classes and workshops. I've been doing some Skillshare myself. I dabble. I enjoy the arts, my friends. I've been doing one recently called YouTube Success, Script, Shoot, and Edit with MKBHD. This is a class by Marques Brownlee. And the thing that I really enjoy about this class is that I don't get TikTok. I don't understand it. I'll be honest with you. It's something that confuses me, but it's massively popular and so popular in a way that I'm concerned at some point somebody's going to come to me and say, hey, you need to have some sort of presence on TikTok. I want to be ready for that moment. And this class is very helpful because it's teaching me how to edit videos, how to make videos, and the best way to shoot. Things I didn't know before because I always had a director or somebody who'd be like, hey, that what you're doing there, that doesn't work. You got to turn around and face the camera. Ah, I understand now. I find my light. Oh, it's so easy. You can explore your creativity at skillshare.com/QQ and get a 1 month free trial of premium membership. That's 1 month of premium membership at skillshare.com/QQ.
It's a tough watch for that reason. And like, even if you know what happens going into it, as is inescapable from the previews and the premise of the movie, I remember in theaters watching it and he gets stuck in that boulder within like, no joke, 12 minutes or something like that. And I'm like, oh, so the movie is mostly okay. There's not like a half hour of him just enjoying hikes. Oh, shit.
Yeah. It's a very close relative to like torture porn or like movies like where people are stuck at sea and the sharks are just toying with them or whatever. It's just stress the whole way through. And it's somebody inflicting the torture on themselves, which is my worst nightmare.
Yeah. Ugh.
Anyway, that's not my fantasy. Getting stuck or like things ever going wrong in even the slightest degree, not my fantasy.
Yeah.
In my fantasy, everything goes right off the bat, and I am good. Mother Nature and I are pals.
Yeah. My adventure mirrors the beginning of their adventures. And then I don't do anything stupid like die or get caught by a rock or anything like that.
You do feel very invincible when you go out into the wilderness and maybe you don't tell anyone. I'm not advocating that. But
no, I don't do that anymore.
You don't tell anyone. You go off and you come back and you're like, ha, beat it. I survived and no one's the wiser. And you feel very immortal. I remember going on a lot of camping trips when I was young on backpacking trips. And that's like backcountry stuff. So you're finding your way on a topographic map. You're deciding on your route. And you go out, you do it, you sleep out there. Everything you need is on your back. And then you come out the other side and you're like, ha ha, lived it. I'm done. Take that, Mother Nature, and it feels very good.
Yeah. There was the first time I went backpacking with my old college roommate in Yosemite and just like walking around with paper maps and just like, all right, we camp here tonight and then we're going to start going again tomorrow morning. And just doing that for three or four days and then getting back out to the parking lot and being like, so I guess the map was right. And I guess I know how to follow maps. Okay, good.
And I was really, go ahead. Sorry.
Instead of treating it like a miracle that we survived, it was like, huh, maybe I just have a natural instinct for surviving in the wild. Well,
yeah, of course. That's the first place your brain goes is, oh, shit, I'm good at this.
I rule at this. I didn't die? Huh. Some people died. That was irresponsible of them. They shouldn't have done it. But me? I know what I'm doing.
No, you know what I did? I treated Mother Nature with respect as I was out there. Mm-hmm. I didn't take my eye off her.
No.
I knew that she could shake me at any minute.
No, that's the secret. When you meet Mother Nature as a peer and the respect is mutual,
that's how you live.
That's how you survive.
That's the only way. Literally the only way. Now, in the books, I can't remember.
It's like taming a wild horse, a thing I could probably do.
I don't know if it's true of Hatchet, but in The River, which is the sequel, there is a topographic map at the beginning of the book that shows you basically a couple different rivers and a couple different lakes and the stream that goes through them and then down through a very narrow section that's very steep and out to an outpost. And I was showing it to my son because I was like, I wonder if I could teach him how to read a topographic map at this age. And so I started asking him, like, what do these squiggly lines mean? And he's like, that's where mountains are. And I was like, fuck, okay. Can you point to the top of a mountain? And he did it. And I was like, how do you know how to read a topographic map already?
Oh, man.
maybe I taught him at some point, but then I was like, what does it mean here? Because the area where the river goes through a gorge, basically, and it's steep on both sides. I was like, what does it mean here where the lines are all really close together? And he goes, that's very steep. And I was like, well, fucking hell. All right, you go out there. You're clearly the one.
Yeah, he's a genius, and he's a natural mountain survivor.
I tried to trick him. I was like, take me. I was like, all right, so if we had to get from here to there, what's the best way for us to go? And he's like this, and said it like that, like, duh, Dad, and picked out like the softest, gentlest route, and even the traced a line for some of it, so like basically traversing across the side of a hill. And I was like, I don't know if that was intentional, but that is absolutely right.
Man. Good for him. Does he like hiking? I forget.
No.
Hates it. Oh, damn.
Loves camping. So I think that's the incentive. And I think maybe deep in my heart, I'm the same way, where the getting out there is not the fun part. It's being out there.
Yeah.
And then the moving from place to place is just sort of a pain in the ass. But the sitting at night as the darkness just descends on you in complete quiet and everything's cold, like, that's what I love.
Yeah.
Death is what I'm describing.
Yeah.
Sweet death comes to claim me.
Hey, so Soren, when we started this episode, I didn't have any questions, and I said, you go first, and then by the time you're done, I'll have a question. So, Soren, quick question for you.
Yeah.
Do you think I came up with one?
Yeah, what's a good question? You had to, like, come up with one right now. What's a good question?
Yeah, I'm looking at the amount of time that we've been talking, and it's a not rude amount of time. I think once we get the ads in there.
Yeah, nobody's going to question it. They'll be like, yeah. In fact, they might get to work and be like, oh, good. It ended right as I was arriving at my job.
And I feel like the next time we record, it'll be a few weeks from now, and we'll have more to say to each other.
True. That's true. I'm going on a big trip.
Yeah.
And I'll come back with lots and lots of stories. Okay. Well, you can follow Daniel on Twitter at @DOB_Inc. You can follow me, Soren, at Soren_LTD. You can follow, let's do Quick Question. You can follow Quick Question at QQ_Soren and Dan, or you can email us at QQ@Soren and Daniel@gmail.com. Kind of goes back and forth. Much to Dan's dismay, all of these fluctuate pretty wildly between Dan and Daniel. We have an Instagram too. You want to know what that is? QQ_with_Soren_and_Daniel. And then, of course, you can follow and hire and find and I don't know if you actually can do any of those things. But we do have a producer and sound engineer and editor that we always like to say thank you to. And his name is Gabe Harder, and he's just the best. He's so good at his job, and he's so funny. And every single time that we actually let him on the mic, he makes me mad because it's so clear he should be on the show. and that's it. I'm not going to let him on right now.
No.
He's probably out walking his dog anyway. All right.
All right, bye.